friends. The present age, the age in which at about the middle of the 20th century we are now living, has been given by various people all sorts of names. Sometimes it is called, for instance, the age of anxiety. Sometimes again it is called the age of psychology. Whether it's called the age of psychology because it's called the age of anxiety or vice versa, I don't know. But these are just two of the names which are given to the age in which we live. This name, the age of psychology, we could say, is particularly appropriate inasmuch as, at present, what we may call the mind or consciousness is being very much studied. In fact, we may say, from an empirical, a mundane point of view, humanity probably at present knows more about the mind, more about its workings, its inner workings, more about its hidden recesses than ever before in history. When we mention the word psychology, most of us at once think of Freud. And we remember that Freud, for instance, discovered, as we may say, the subconscious mind. Even though poets and philosophers had had some intimation of its existence long before, but Freud placed this whole concept of the subconscious mind on an irrefutable scientific basis. Then again, to mention another great modern psychologist, Jung went even further. Envisaged not only the subconscious mind, which he called the personal unconscious, but envisaged the unconscious itself, with a capital U. Not perhaps a very helpful term, because it does include contents which we may say on their own level at least are certainly conscious. But all these facts go to show how much the mind, consciousness, the psyche is being studied nowadays. We also find that various hidden powers of the mind have been made the subject of scientific investigation. I think we can now say that telepathy, thought transference, is an accepted scientific fact. So perhaps is precognition, and possibly even the experience of clairvoyance, of seeing things at a distance. I think we can also say that nowadays we probably know much more about abnormal mental states, which used to be called conditions of insanity, than we ever did before in our history. At least we're more aware of them. We may not always be able to do very much about them, but they have been studied. And the importance of the study of these states is very widely recognized. More recently still, especially in very recent years, we may say that all sorts of researches have been going on into the effect of various drugs, especially LSD, on the human mind. And it does seem as though, in all these ways, ever more fascinating vistas are beginning to be revealed. Strange to say, we may even go so far as to observe that even professional psychologists, even psychoanalysts in some cases, psychotherapists, are beginning to take seriously something at which they previously laughed, many of them, that is what we may call even mystical experience. Some of them are beginning to consider seriously even this. And all this is indeed extremely interesting. I've skipped, as you've seen, over a vast field. I've just given a pointer here and there, because this is all, as it were, introductory. It all adds up to one thing, to one point, that our concept of the mind in the West is changing. In fact, has been considerably enlarged, is being all the time more and more enlarged. We used to have in the the West a very limited, a very superficial notion of what the mind of man was. We thought of it as something relatively static. We identified it with the conscious mind, with the individual consciousness, and so on. We tied it up with the body very much. But this is all now changed, or beginning to be changed. And we're beginning to realize, we're beginning to see that the range of mind, the range of consciousness, is far greater than we had ever previously thought. Depth psychology particularly is very fond of the image of the iceberg. We all know that the iceberg is an enormous mass of ice, and 6/7 of it is submerged. I think it's 6/7, the exact proportion doesn't matter. And only 1/7 shows above the surface of the waves. And we're often told that the mind is like this. The conscious tip, as it were, protruding above the waves of the unconscious, is very small, is only a very tiny fraction of the whole. And underneath, corresponding to the submerged portion of the iceberg, there are layers and layers, levels and levels, which are not conscious, of which normally we are not aware. So this is the sort of image, as it were, which depth psychology presents to us. But we may say that this is not the whole truth. We may say it's only half the truth. We can say that the mind is not only like an iceberg, 6/7 of which are submerged, but the mind is also like a mountain, like the mountains which one sees not only in the Alps but in the Himalayas, as I've seen them so often, towering thousands and thousands of feet up, but the summits, the higher slopes, as it were, covered with cloud. You see only the lower slopes, you see only the foothills. But those higher peaks, most of the time, you don't see at all. They're covered with an impenetrable blanket of mist and cloud. So we may say the mind is also like this. The mind has not only depths of which we are unaware, it has also heights of which we're unaware too. So that if we want to get a complete picture or image of the mind, we should combine both these images. The image of the iceberg with its submerged depths, and the image of the mountain with its veiled peaks. Both of these represent different aspects of the mind, revealing that the mind has depths below mind and heights also above.